Welcome to Gay Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with renowned LGBTQ authors and up-and-coming talent of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Justine, before we get started today, my guest, Dieter Moitzi, wanted me to give you a message.
Yes. And the message would be?
He wants me to give you his best and many thanks to you for all your recommendations.
I bet.
And he wants
I have
to
a
say,
ton of recommendations.
Yes.
And he's read a lot of them. He's reviewed a lot of them.
And he is honored that you recommended his book last year.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great book. That was the stuffed coffin that I recommended.
Yes, it was.
And he's going to be talking about his newest one, correct?
Yeah, we talk a little bit about the stuffed coffin, and we do talk about the newest one as well.
Excellent. Looking forward to that.
So what do you have for us today?
I have got a somewhat of a classic. It's probably about 10 years old. It's known to several people. It's called The Yellow Canary. It is book one of the L.A. After Midnight Quartet. Books two and three are The Black Cat and The Blue Parrot. And book four is still to come. Now, I'm never sure if it's coming. It's been a while since book three, but perhaps we'll be able to find something out and I'll keep people posted later on.
That'd be great.
It is a noir kind of book. It's a gritty recommendation, which I think I've only had one other book like this. It is along the lines of Mark McNeice's early books, his Mitchell James series, and it reminds me of the Mitchell O'Reilly series by somebody I can't remember the name of the author of the Mitchell O'Reilly series.
Yeah, some loser.
But it's set in LA, and the first book is set in the 1950s, and the second book is set in the 1960s, third book in the 70s, and the fourth book is scheduled to be in the 80s.
So we're skipping decades in a series. That's unusual.
Yeah, skipping decades in the series. It follows the same two characters. I reread the first book recently. My recollection of the series that I read all three of them a couple of years ago. My recollection is that characters kind of find each other again in each decade, not that they've stayed together through the decades.
And The Yellow Canary, the one that you're recommending today, which number in the series is that?
It's the first book.
The first one.
And it's a really, really good idea to read in order. So that's why I'm going to review this first book. It's not one of those really where, you know, you can pick up the third book and get the whole feel of the series. You really need the first book to go into the second. It's not a continuation of the story, but it really it shows you where these characters have been before, and it chronicles their. You just get the full effect. These are really characters that develop over the years.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. So we're in the 50s at a time when sodomy was a felony that could carry a life sentence in California. The details in this book are very realistic. You would think that it was written at the time, down to the cloth dryer, you know, the hand dryers that were in the bathrooms that had just a cloth towel that rolled around, which, you know, nowadays I can't imagine that anybody would ever touch such a thing, but that's.
And I got to tell you, this is funny. For whatever reason, the other day I was wondering why nobody mentions people washing their clothes when they do period pieces.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Why'd that come to my mind? I don't know, but here you're bringing it up now.
Yep. It's, you know, things like that, down to those little details. And it's set in Los Angeles. And for those who know Los Angeles history, as I know you do, you will just feel like you're stuck back in that period of time, and that no time has passed from then to the present. It really does a marvelous job in setting the scene and pulling LA in as almost a character in the book. There is another thing at the time, where not only was it a felony, but psychiatrists tried to cure it by using shock treatment. There's a psychiatrist in the book talking to another psychiatrist about the usefulness of a lobotomy to treat such a thing. The recent studies back then of maybe it wasn't effective, that the deviant behavior only increased 5 years later. And without any sense of, boy, this was really what? Do we care whether it works or not? What?
Wow.
And then it's also built at a time where, you know, a lot of people are familiar with the fact that the car companies got rid of the red cars in downtown LA, those trolleys. In fact, that's a detail that is so woven in that you see it in Roger Rabbit, the cartoon. But after that, there was a series of revitalizations. And I know that Simple Justice by John Morgan Wilson talks about the fact that the Dodger Stadium took a lot of homes and neighborhoods out in order to create Dodger Stadium. This book is centered around the time period when they knocked down homes off Bunker Hill and put up the various business parks and the like up there. I don't know how familiar you are with Bunker Hill, but it used to be residential neighborhoods and, you know, slums, but poor people had, you know, they were residential houses, good homes that were affordable.
It was actually a very upscale neighborhood until approximately the 1950s, 1925s, when Beverly Hills came about and all the rich folk moved away and all those beautiful mansions turned into boarding houses.
Right.
Not that it has anything to do with the story you're talking about, but yes, I'm familiar with Bunker Hill.
No, but that's what happened, is that it was sound housing that was, you know, built by people who then moved on, and then poor people moved in and the neighborhood was run down, but they were still rooming houses that were of good quality. They weren't, you know, they weren't tar shacks. So a lot of the plot centers around the fact that those homes are going away and the office buildings are being put up there. That gives you the background. And when I tell you that's a character in the mystery, you know, that I'm not giving too much away. If I told you how it wove in, that would be a spoiler. So the main characters, one is an assistant district attorney, a very high deputy district attorney, a high profile deputy district attorney who has been in the papers a lot. He just got a mobster put away for life, but he's gay. He has a boyfriend who is over often. And if it was found out that he was gay, then his career would be ruined. He would be ruined. He could probably get out of going to jail, but the impact on his life would be horrendous.
Devastating.
Devastating. And the other character is a police officer named Jim Blake. And Jim, when the book opens, and Jim is on his first day of work at the police department, and he's being sent into a gay bar to try to, you know, do a sting and arrest somebody for solicitation. And he goes in there, they make him as a cop, and then some guy bumps into him and he arrests him because, you know, people are staring at him and he's got to have an arrest. He doesn't know what to do. He kind of panics and arrests this guy. And then everything goes wrong from there.
That's a hell of a first day at work.
It's a hell of a first day at work. Yes, it's a hell of a first day at work. And so the arrestee ends up at the jail. The deputy DA gets a call from there. There are a remarkable series of deaths that range from people that society back then considered throwaways to people who are more prominent, whose death is, you know, they get rid of them and then tell the world that they've run off someplace. That's the kind of story that it is. It's got that noir feel to it. It is not a very politically correct book because, well, when I say that, the characters that we like and the narration is all very charming, but the cops in it are, the bad cops at least, are very abusive. They talk about the black policeman with the N-word and the like. And it's far from a happy ending. But if you like those kind of mysteries, it is a very good mystery. It's a very well-written mystery. It's got a glowing review as well as a gritty review. And as you can tell from my tone, it's, you know, sometimes it's upbeat fun. This is a great time. No, this is really a somber kind of dark, a dark, dark mystery. But very, you know, I don't know if it's enjoyable so much as it is satisfying.
Glowing and gritty.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, as soon as I finished it, I look back at my Kindle history and I bought this one day, the second one the next day, and the third one 2 days later. So it was a series that I could not put down. They're all available on KU now on Kindle Unlimited. But the first book, if you don't have that, it's on sale for $2.99. So pick it up while you get a chance.
Anything else for us today?
Well, Lev Raphael that you had on last week, his book will be coming out soon, Death of a Constant Lover. Simple Justice is still doing well. John Morgan Wilson, it is a great book. And really, if you haven't picked it up yet, you kind of like didn't want to pick it up on the first day with thinking about it, I really recommend you pick it up. As you can tell, I don't always talk about the books week after week after week, but Simple Justice is really a book that you should get and read, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to put it high on my list, like the one you just, Yellow Canary, because that sounds right up my alley.
Yeah. Yeah. They both do. And Simple Justice is not nearly as dark, but it's got that same gritty feel, and it's set in this, you know, it's the same set in the city against the backdrop of an ugly society and a slightly, if not completely, corrupt system.
Well, those are great reviews today.
Yep.
And I will talk to you next week.
All right. See you then.
Hi, this is Brad. Not only do I interview authors, I write novels too. Check out my Mitchell Riley mystery series on my website, bradshreve.com. Dieter Moitzi grew up in a little village in Austria. At the age of 18, he moved to Vienna to get his master's degree in political science, French, and Spanish. Today, he is living in Paris, France with his boyfriend and works as a graphic designer. So far, he has published 2 short story collections, 3 poetry collections, as well as 2 murder mystery novels in French, German, and English, the first of which won the French Gay Crime Fiction Award in 2019. Welcome to the Gay Mystery Podcast, Dieter. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, it's thank you, and it's an honor to be here.
Well, first, I want to congratulate you. Last November, I think you know this, Justine did a recommendation for your novel here on the show.
Yes, I listened to it. Yeah, very nice of her.
Yep, for The Stuffed Coffin, and she gave it a glowing recommendation. So
yes, I was very, very honored.
Good.
Very nice recommendation.
Well, that same novel is what won you the French Gay Fiction Award in 2019, correct?
That's correct, and I was very surprised because French is not my mother tongue,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a very, how can I say that? I'm very critical with my own writing,
mm-hmm.
and never satisfied when it's ready and when it's published. So I was really very surprised that it had such a, that it got such a nice praise from the jury here in France and from Justine.
Well, it's. I think we all reached that point where it's not what I want, but I can't edit anymore. It's time to release it and just deal with it. And it's usually much better than we think it is.
Yes.
Well, I got to say, that's impressive for your first novel. Do you want to share the experience of when you found out?
Well, it was announced on Facebook, actually. And they asked me not to talk about it because there was a little ceremony in the gay center in Paris. And I had to make a speech for the acceptance of the award. And I remember we were sitting in the metro with my boyfriend, and he asked me, what did you prepare for your speech? And I said, why? Nothing. I don't know where we will go, but I will just say thank you and some words. And well, actually, that's what I did. And it went rather smoothly. You know, I'm a bit strange guy, and I got nervous afterwards, and we left after, I think, 10 seconds. Because I'm quite shy when I have to talk to people I don't know. And talking before an audience is not a problem, but afterwards, this face-to-face conversations, I didn't know what to say, so we left after 10 seconds.
Would you say that you're as socially inept as many writers are?
I don't think I'm socially inept. It's just that when I don't know somebody, it takes me some time to warm up and to know what to talk about. And it's not the same thing as making a speech, because you talk to a couple of faces, a whole room where you don't know anybody. But when you meet somebody new and the people there seem to know each other, so that was the strange thing. And I can be a bit like an oyster when I don't know somebody I have to talk to.
Yeah, I'm very similar. I can do a presentation. I used to have to do a lot of presentations in my former career, and never had a problem with it. I actually enjoyed it, and I've done some presentations at like our local library on writing, and I'm totally fine with that. But to meet somebody brand new and have to deal with that whole, I'm an introvert, and now I have to try and converse with this individual, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah, same here. If I stumble upon someone who's very extrovert and easygoing and who asks questions, I will answer and it will be much an easier flow. But if people expect of me to start a conversation, it will be a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, I think we're very similar in that way. And I think probably a lot of writers are that way. Not all. I know some outgoing writers. But I think to be able to sit for long hours and write a novel, it's almost a necessity to be somewhat introverted. Now, you have The Stuffed Coffin listed as the first in the Damien Dreschler's investigative series.
Yes.
So can we expect a follow-up soon?
I already started it, as a matter of fact. I think I wrote 50 pages of the second novel, which will be called in French. I write most of my novels in French first. So it will be called Les Belles Silhouettes, the beautiful silhouettes, or the beautiful shapes. I don't know yet for the English title. And when I had started it, I suddenly had an urge to write another story, and that's how my second novel came out, which was with other main characters all together. So I had to postpone the second book of the Damien Dreschler series. Mm-hmm. But I'm planning on taking it up again. I don't know, because now I'm working on another novel altogether, so hopefully it will be ready in 2021.
Okay. So do you write all your novels? You said you write in French first, and then I know you translate to English. Do you do Spanish as well?
I learned Spanish, but I never, ever went to a Spanish-speaking country. So I think I lost almost everything, apart from saying hello and can I have a beer or a glass of wine? I lost everything.
And where's the bathroom?
Yeah, that's very important too.
Especially if you know where how to ask, where's the beer? you've published short stories in a variety of subjects and three books of poetry. Why mysteries?
Whoa, that's a very good question. I think it's because I had the idea for this first novel, The Stuffed Coffin, while being on holidays in Greece. Because it's the whole novel is set in a small village in Greece, and the idea came to me automatically I was sitting, enjoying myself in sitting in the sun and tanning. And I had this idea of a dead person swimming in the swimming pool. And that's how the whole idea was born. And then I wrote this novel. This was about 15 years ago. And sent it to some editors in France. And they all said, no, thank you. Then I translated it into German and sent it to editors in Germany who said the same thing. And I put it just in a drawer and forgot about it. And I took it up again 3 years ago, telling myself, well, you have one novel that's finished. Just read it again and try to, you know, change little things, etc. And when I read the first chapters, I told myself, this is just pure crap. And I wrote it from scrap all over again. I kept the main characters and I kept the setting. But I wrote it all over again. And that's how The Stuffed Coffin came to life.
I know quite a few writers that when they're done with the novel, maybe not just the first draft, but even further in like you had, and then they set it aside for a while and then go back to it, just like you just did, and they find it helps tremendously to improve the novel. Mm. And your story of the body floating in the pool reminds me of Sunset Boulevard. I don't know if you're familiar with the film.
Not at all. I'm not very much into movies, I'm afraid, and I'm very bad with names.
Okay.
That's even worse.
Well, it's a classic. I'm drawing a total blank on the who starred in it, and it's somebody you would probably know, whether you watch them or not. But it's a very classic movie that opens with a body floating in a swimming pool, and the rest of the movie explains how that happened. So it's not necessarily it's not really necessarily a murder. It's or a murder mystery. It's just
I'm taking notes as we speak.
Yeah, I suggest it's a classic film. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I've had mystery writers on in the past who said that writing poetry helped them to write longer fiction. Do you find this to be true?
It's surely true. In fact, I started writing again because I did it when I was a youngster, as many people do, and I stopped it because, you know, life and job and first boyfriend and long-term relationship, which was a quite toxic one. And when it was over, I started a blog, a literary blog, where I just wrote my memories, very, very short snapshot-like stories. And I was amazed by, and I wrote it in English. Don't ask me why, because I'm living in France. My mother tongue is German, and I wrote a blog in English. And I was amazed by the success it had and by the repercussions, because what's really great about English-speaking people is that they leave comments on blogs. French almost never do.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a successful French blog. Nobody will ever leave a comment. And yeah. I was really amazed because I had loads and loads of comments of people trying to talk to me about the stories and about myself and why I was writing in English. And that's how I started to write again. And then I joined an online forum, a literary forum, and I posted my first poems. And there again, it was in English. And there again, I had really good answers and good discussions about poetry and about my poems. And that's why I published my poems.
Now, the blog you mentioned, is that still the one that I know you have a blog currently on DieterMoitze.com? Is it the same blog or is
not that, at all? No.
Okay.
It's just my author's blog, and the other one I stopped it 8 years ago.
Okay.
I closed it down because I didn't have time to write for the blog anymore, and I told myself this was a period of my life, and the best thing is to close it down, so it doesn't exist anymore.
I did the exact same thing, though I have picked it back up for a whole different reason. But after 10 years, I said it was time to move on and do some real writing.
Yeah,
you will love, not that writing a blog isn't a great skill.
Yeah, you will love. I even had a cooking blog, which was called Dieter's in the Kitchen. And I stopped it because it was in English and people thought it was, they read my first name, which is spelled Dieter, and they thought it was Dieter's cooking. And of course, I was putting online Austrian and French recipes, which are anything but dietary. Great deception for the audience.
You put a lot of people on a diet that gained weight and they didn't understand.
Yes, exactly.
Your most recent novel, Till Death Do Us Part, it was published in June. And yes. I found the blurb very interesting. There is an Aunt Agatha, a protagonist named Raphael Perot, and the story takes place on a Nile cruise. Now, those names and locations sound vaguely familiar. I take it that's not a coincidence.
It's not. It's absolutely not.
And why did you choose to, I guess, honor Agatha Christie in that way?
First of all, I'm really a huge fan of her novels. And then I am a huge fan of the old movies with, you know Peter Ustinov?
I'm yes.
a huge fan when he played Poirot. He's absolutely not perfect for the role as described in the novels, but he's such an accomplished actor. And I simply love this movie, Death on the Nile. And with my boyfriend, we went on holidays. We made a Nile cruise 2 years ago, I think. And we brought back, I think, 3,000 photos. And I was going through the photos once again, and another idea came up, and I knew it wouldn't be right to use Damian Drexler, my first main character from my first novel. It wouldn't be right to use him for that novel, so I had to invent new characters, and that's how the novel was born. And then I thought, yes, it would be quite funny to call the main character Raphael Perot, as Mr. Hercule Poirot. And as I really love Aunt Agatha, who's the writer? Travels with My Aunts.
Oh, I am.
Jesus Christ. I don't remember.
I understand that.
I love the idea of having a rather quirky and weird aunt accompany her nephew on this Nile cruise where he would meet another young guy, etc., etc. So that's how the novel was born.
And there's a lot of humor in Until Death Do Us Part. Is there a particular scene that made you laugh out loud when you were writing it?
Yes, there's one scene when, because actually Raphael, the main character, meets an Italian guy on that ship during the cruise. And he thinks the Italian guy is straight because the Italian is traveling with his best friend, really a wonderful and beautiful girl, Italian as well. And the Italian is already quite smitten with the French guy from the start. And there's one scene when they sit in the dark and the boat is moving upstream and they have their first real conversation. And there are some things that made me chuckle when I was writing it, because I wanted to end this scene with a rather chaste kiss. And there had to be some misunderstandings. And that made me laugh.
Isn't it a great feeling when you're writing something that's supposed to be funny and you laugh? Because you did it. You know you're in the right zone. I find also the same thing if I'm writing a thrilling section of the book. If my hands are sweaty and I'm feeling tense, I know I'm on the right path.
I remember I'm very bad with writing sex scenes.
Mm-hmm. They're difficult.
It's difficult because I don't want to write too much cliches into a sex scene. And well, we both know how male on male sex really works.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to I wanted to make it feel true without giving away too much of myself. And there's no sex scene in the second novel, Till Death Do Us Part, but there are some, let's call them sensual scenes in The Stuffed Coffin. And I knew it was good when I got a hard-on while writing a specific scene. And I thought, yes. Now I think this is a good way to describe things. Sorry if I'm too outspoken.
No, that's fine. I would say that you definitely were on the right track if that's what happened. So good for you. Did you want to tell us more about that story? You've told us a little bit about Till Death Do Us Part. Is there more that you can tell us without giving too much away?
What I tried to do in this book was to install a first episode, let's call it like that, where two young men meet, and there's in the first chapter there's a dead man found in his cabin, and they try to find out who did it, which is normal for a murder mystery, but at the same time they more or less fall in love with each other. But I wanted this only to be a first installment. So there's, apart from that first chaste kiss and I think a second one, there's nothing much going on sex-wise. Because I want this to be a series where they, well, I don't want to give away too much, but no. They will find each other in the subsequent books. And there will be misunderstandings and obstacles, and because I think it will be three or four books. I have already ideas for the two following ones. So, of course, I just came back from Corsica, where I had a two-week holiday. And, of course, there's one of the books that will take place on the Isle of Corsica. That's how my stories are always created. I go someplace and I find the settings so amazing, and I have strange encounters, and they just give me ideas.
Yeah, we're all different. People are amazed. I get my story ideas when a title hits me, which is very unusual. And the thing about sex scenes is the reason I find they're difficult to write, and I think a lot of others, is animals have had sex since the beginning of time. And how do you describe something in a unique way that we've been doing over and over again for so long?
Yes, and it's also I have two problems with this. The first one is I know the main audience for gay novels today is women.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they have certain expectations that I'm not sure I can fulfill in my descriptions. This is my first problem, so I don't want to disappoint them, but I don't want to write something that is not truthful. And the second problem is, as I translate my books to German, I wouldn't want my mother to blush. she loves murder mysteries, but I don't want her to blush if she reads one of my books. And I have to overcome that, I know.
It's a tough balance.
Yeah, I know. And it's easier for me to write them in French or in English because it's not my mother tongue. When I translate them, even I am almost blushing sometimes because I have to. Because if you take the C word for the male appendix,
you can cuss dick, on this show.
Yeah, okay. If you say cock or dick in English, for me, I read that so often because I read many novels in English that I just don't react anymore. But to use the same word in German that would make me blush. It's strange.
Yeah, it is strange that it would change from one language to another, your response to it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Other than Agatha Christie, what other mystery writers or which other mystery writers have inspired you?
And
how?
Most recently, I think it was Josh Lanyon.
Mm-hmm.
I really like her books. And I've never met her yet. She was supposed to come to Paris for the book fair this spring. And I was so excited because we were meant to meet and have a drink. And, with the epidemic and the COVID, she had to cancel her trip. But I already did one lengthy interview with her, and she's really such a charming person.
Yeah, I had her on the show, and she was delightful to talk to.
Yes, I really like her because she's as humorous as her books. She's funny, she's light, she's witty. She puts you at ease immediately. And yeah, and I like her books, which is a very good point too. And then there are several books which I wouldn't have known if there wasn't Requiert Tales. You know, Justine must have talked about some of the Requiert Tales books,
mm-hmm.
which they republish. And I'm a huge fan of Grant Michaels, the mm-hmm. late Grant Michaels. And I'm discovering book after book his universe and his main character. And I really like his writing. Apart from that, I'm really sorry. As I told you, I'm bad, bad, bad with names. And I remember these two names because I've written reviews about them. But otherwise, I always have to reopen the books because I don't remember the names of the main characters when I write a review.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
I'm very similar. When I'm done with a book, it's a very short time later that I remembered I really liked it or I really disliked it, but I can't remember the details, which yeah, as a writer, that makes it more difficult for me to write my own. That's just the way my brain works. And on behalf of the folks over at Requiert Tales, I'm going to say thank you for the plug.
Oh, it's normal because really I think they are doing such an amazing job. I remember that I absolutely wanted my boyfriend to read one of my favorite books, which is not a murder mystery at all, which is like People in History, Felice Picano,
mm-hmm.
which was really one of my most favorite books ever. And I just couldn't find a copy, neither in English nor in French. And I really wanted him to read it because I wanted him to share this marvelous story and the writing. And when I heard that they republished even Felice Picano, who isn't dead, fortunately, yeah. I was so excited. And I find they are doing such a wonderful job.
Yeah, it's really funny. I know their original goal was just to put out a few books that people would ask, like, whatever happened to, and how it's turned into a full-time deal for them. So a lot of work being a publisher.
Oh, I suppose so, yes.
I guess you started reading at an early age.
I did.
What books were you most likely to read when you were younger? Or what types of books?
I think, I don't know if she's really well known in the U.S. Enid Blyton, does it ring a bell?
Not off the top of my head, but like you, I'm terrible with names.
I'm Googling as we talk because I only know the German name. She wrote one series, I'm on it, which was The Famous Five. That might ring a bell because it was even a TV show. I even have the song at the start of the show. I even have it in my head now.
You were a fan.
I was a fan because it was a young adult fiction, and I don't think it was murder mysteries as such, but it was crime fiction, and there were four friends, youngsters, with a dog. That's why it was called The Famous Five, and it was a series. I think she wrote 20 or 30 books about them. And it was funny, it was intriguing. You had this crime aspect. They had to find out who had stolen something or who had abducted a dog. Or it was always about the crime. I really liked them. And of course, I read the Ingalls stories.
Yeah.
Little House on the Prairie, is that it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. I loved those books more than the series. The TV shows were dull as hell.
Yeah, and they were totally inaccurate from the novels.
Of course, the daddy was hot. I think everybody was in love with him when he played in Dallas. What was his name? Michael Landon.
Yes. Said it. Yes. Earlier in Bonanza.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, he was hot as hell too.
Yes. Yes, he was a teenage heartthrob back then.
Yeah, we had a crush. My sister and I, we both had a crush on him. A huge crush.
That's funny. Now, in addition to all the writing you do, you write reviews for the Rainbow Book Reviews.
Yes.
And you also have your own review site, Livre Gay.
Yes.
As an author, do you find it awkward to review the works of other authors?
Not really, because first of all, at Rainbow Book Reviews, they have a policy which I really like. They don't want you to destroy a book. If you don't like a book, if you really hate it, they prefer you to send them a mail saying, I can't finish it. It's crap. And they will give it to someone else. And if you have finished a book and do write a review, they want you to be constructive with your... If you're critical, they want you to be constructive. And this is something I like, because I would hate for my books to be completely, you know... if someone hated it so much that they wrote a crappy review, I would hate that.
Yes.
And I don't want to do that to another author. So I really like the policy. And there were some books I found so awful that I had to tell the really charming woman who runs the place, I'm really sorry, I can't finish that crap.
I'm sure you come through quite a few of those, more than you'd like.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, your most recent book is Till Death Do Us Part. And is that available pretty much everywhere?
Well, I'm a self-published author, so you can find it on Amazon in ebook version and printed version. And you can find it on, I put it also on Kobo. I don't think that's very well known in the US.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they are partners with Walmart, and it's ebook only, but it's available on the Walmart sites.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's why I put it on them, because they are also partners with a huge book retailer here in France. That's what interested me.
So I will put a link to your book on Amazon in the show notes.
Thank you.
I'll also put your website so people can find it, DieterMoise.com.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend too. Thank you for listening.